Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette, dated Sunday, June 21st of 2020. We will begin today's reading on the front page with an article headlined, Fire, Blast Seared into Town's Memory, by Tom Kasich. There isn't a fireball festival in Crescent City this year. The coronavirus pandemic saw to that. On the 50th anniversary of one of the scariest days in central Illinois history. It was about 6:30 a.m. on Sunday, June 21st, 1970, also a Father's Day, that a 109-car Toledo, Peoria, and Western Railway train suffered a partial derailment, fire, and series of explosions that obliterated a large portion of downtown Crescent City. Miraculously, no one in the Iroquois County community of about 650, about 55 miles northeast of Champaign, died in the series of mushroom cloud-type explosions that followed through the morning. There were 9 separate blasts from 9 separate tank cars loaded with liquefied petroleum gas or propane. Some 66 people were injured, most of them firefighters, who were burned as the orange and yellow fireballs seared the nearby area and shot skyward. We were sleeping upstairs. We had one son at the time. Mother was pregnant, and I heard the first explosion, recalled Richard Gockin, 26 years old at the time, and the operator of the town's Amoco service station. I had been in the Army a few years earlier and had been stationed in Germany. The first thing I thought of, subconsciously, was that the Russians were coming across Checkpoint Charlie, the crossing point between West and East Berlin during the Cold War. The original fireball, when I looked out the window, it basically tore the shade off. The whole yard was on fire. But by the time I got downstairs, it was out. It was just a flash. The explosion had sucked all the fuel out of the atmosphere and put itself out. Gockin grabbed his wife and son, drove them to a spot far outside of town, and went to the Amoco station. The rest of the town was quickly evacuated. The primary reason there were no deaths that day, leaving it to mostly volunteer firefighters from throughout central Illinois to contain the fires and explosions. If you look at that train wreck, where the tank cars exploded, it was like a mushroom, said Gockin, who later served as Crescent City's fire chief for 21 years. It would go up and then over, so that the area between US 24 and maybe a half block north of the wreck was saved. But outside of that and along 24, it took down all the block buildings. There was a lot of propane gas in the atmosphere, and it went so high up before it exploded. When it went up, it was like an atomic bomb going off. It went 150,200 feet up into the air. 18 businesses were destroyed in the fire and explosions, including the town's post office. Total damage to the community was estimated at $2 million, or about $13.5 million in today's dollars. As the tank cars exploded, they would make like a missile and move through the air or along the ground, Gockin said. One went from the tracks there, knocked down a big oak tree, a block building, took off the back of a house, and ended up inside a house a block and a half away, he said. Crystal Rabe, a local business owner, whose husband is the mayor of Crescent City, said she has an aerial photograph of her home shortly after the blast. We're 4 blocks away. We had a tanker that ended up probably 2 blocks further north in a field, she said. It had blown that far. Jim Ward, who served as mayor of Crescent City for 28 years, said, a tank car blew apart and about a third of it came down and scooped in our yard about 20 feet deep. It would have instantly killed anybody. I was a boy scoutmaster at the time. We had been camping and came home Saturday afternoon. I had pup tents set up in our yard, drying out. When the explosion happened, Gawkins' dad ran and got behind the pup tents, and the next thing you knew, they were all gone. All there was just stakes in the ground. Mark Rabe, who succeeded Ward as mayor 3 years ago, was 5 years old at the time of the accident. When the explosions happened, we headed about a mile outside of town until they told us we weren't even safe a mile outside of town, he recalled. We went to stay with our grandparents for about a week until it was safe to come back. When we came back, there were total buildings gone, just holes in the ground. It looked like World War III. Governor Richard Ogilvie, a World War II Army vet who toured the town the morning after the explosions, said the site reminded him of towns I saw in France in 1944 and 1945. It looks like a bomb hit the town. The National Transportation Safety Board determined that the accident was caused by the failure of a journal box, or axle box, on the outside of one of the train's tank cars. Gawkins said there was a report at the time that someone saw flames coming out by the wheels of a car when they came out of Gilman, 7 miles to the west, and they tried to chase it down to get the train stopped, but they didn't get it done. The derailment finally occurred as the 20th to 34th cars on the train left the rails soon after it crossed Colfax Street in Crescent City. There will be no church services or memorials today in Crescent City to mark the 50th anniversary of the accident, although there was a small gathering of friends Saturday. Coronavirus precautions sidetracked the grand plans for another Fireball Festival this weekend. Jim Ward and I organized the first one, Gawkins said. It wasn't a celebration, Ward said. It was a commemoration. We were just thankful that nobody got killed. We're going to have it next summer, said Mark Rabe, the mayor. It's too bad that we couldn't do it this year, but we'll be back. We need to celebrate the spirit of this town. Also on the front page is regarding the coronavirus pandemic, day 93 of the state shutdown. Illinois impact. Man in 30s becomes 12th and youngest Champaign County resident to die. For the third time in a week, a Champaign County resident died from COVID-19, local public health officials said Saturday. Champaign-Urbana Public Health District Administrator Julie Pride told the News Gazette that the county's 12th fatality was a man in his 30s with an unspecified health condition. The latest COVID-19 victim is the youngest Champaign County resident to die of the virus during the pandemic. Before Saturday, three people in their 40s, a man with no known conditions and a man and woman with underlying conditions, were the youngest. With Restore Illinois Phase 4 likely to start Friday, the number of new cases throughout the area remain low. In Champaign County, 5 positive results emerged from 607 new tests Saturday. That's a positivity rate of 0.8%, a third of Saturday's statewide rate. Of Champaign County's 766 confirmed cases, 697 are considered recovered and 57 are active, with 8 residents hospitalized. 4 zip codes have had triple-digit cases during the pandemic. Rantoul, 182, Champaign, 61821, 136, Urbana, 125, and Champaign, 61820, with 121. Next article on the front page is regarding coronavirus response, the return of college football, Have a seat. This may take a while until fans know what's next, by Bob Asmussen. The email arrived Tuesday night with the subject line, Fighting Illini COVID-19 Impact Survey. Dave Lesney of Champaign, a football and basketball season ticket holder for 25-plus years, dutifully answered the 20 questions, and here is a sampling of his responses. Question: how comfortable are you attending Illinois football and men's basketball games in the fall? Answer: very comfortable, with social distancing. Question: will you attend games if you are required to wear a mask or face covering while in common areas of the stadium, entrance, great hall, restrooms? Answer: yes, but if the state of Illinois says I don't have to, I'm not going to. Lesney, 63, graduated from the U of I in 1979 and worked at the school for more than 40 years. He is an iFund donor with seats in the Colonnades Club. He appreciated the chance to answer the survey. I think it's good to give the DIA feedback on what we're looking for going forward, Lesney said. Dave and his wife, Diana, are in the high-risk coronavirus category because of their age and other factors. Diana is a cancer survivor, and Dave deals with hypertension. I like that they are looking out and planning ahead for this and seeing what we might be able to do within reason, Lesney said. The survey was put together by Cassie Arner, Illinois Associate Athletic Director for Marketing, Fan Development, and Communication. She consulted with other stakeholders, including the ticket office and external relations, before putting it together. The surveys were sent to anyone who had purchased tickets in the past 2 years. Arner estimated about 10,000 received the emails. By Wednesday, more than 1,000 had responded. Before it takes a ticket or sells a bucket of popcorn at a concession stand, the Illinois Athletic Department vows to follow the science and safety guidelines handed down by state and local officials. But there are different ways to achieve the goals. The department wants to know what the fans think. It would be very short-sighted to make all those decisions in a vacuum without getting some feedback from the people who will actually have to live with our decisions, Arner said. For example, how do fans feel about parking? Are they okay with thinned-out lots or no tailgating at all? Every bit of input helps. We know what we know today, Arner said. We know that the safety guidelines are stressing the 6 feet and the face coverings and things like that. But if things start to loosen or restrictions are less strict by the authorities, we may still see that our fans want us to be that strict throughout the season. We may go above and beyond the science if that's what is going to make our fans feel the most confident and comfortable coming back to Memorial Stadium. All ideas are under consideration. The school is looking at what it can do to increase the cleaning of its facilities and different methods that can be used. Arner said Illinois is buying hand sanitizer in bulk and looking at single servings that resemble ketchup packets. There's a general sense of how we're going to operate, but certainly some of the details are what we think the surveys can help us with, Arner said. Local interest. Illinois is scheduled to play 7 games this season at Memorial Stadium, opening against Illinois State on September 4th. Other visiting teams include UConn, September 12th, Bowling Green, September 19th, Purdue, October 17th, Minnesota, October 24th, Iowa, November 7th, and Ohio State, November 21st. In 2016, Visit Champaign County came up with a financial calculator to measure the area economic impact of a home football game. Based on attendance of 42,000 in the 60,670-seat building, the number was between $2.8 million and $3 million per game. Assuming the number is similar or higher today, that means a 7-game season is worth between $19.6 and $21 million for Champaign-Urbana area coffers. It's a lot of money, Visit Champaign County President and CEO Jane DeLuce said. There's a lot of stuff that goes into the economy of hosting a football game. Grocery stores, hotels, liquor stores, caterers, restaurants, florists, and so many other businesses benefit from football weekends. And they all hire employees to staff their businesses. There is a huge domino effect, DeLuce said. It's impactful across the board. If the season is played with the stadium allowed to be partially filled, the financial impact will change based on where the fans are from. If they travel from out of town, it will increase the money spent on hotels, gas, etc. Illinois is coming off its first bowl season since 2014 with a long list of returning starters, including quarterback Brandon Peters. It is expected to be Lovie Smith's best team. There's excitement about the team, DeLuce said. Taste of champagne. Papadel's Pizza Factory at 1201 South Neal has been serving hungry Illini fans for decades. Needless to say, the restaurant wants to see football games played this season at Memorial Stadium. The place has 500 seats and they are all filled on game days, with a wait. Those are big days for us, Papadel's general manager, Andrea Seaton, said. It's a huge hit if we lose the football season. Papadel's moved to its current location in part to remain close to the stadium and Illinois campus. There's always been a connection, Seaton said. Football game days, rival graduation, the Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon, and the Engineering Open House as the busiest of the year for Papadel's. Seaton is hoping the Papadel's dining room will be allowed to reopen in the coming months. If we're only 50% or 75% capacity and the football stadium has to do the same, then that's not terrible. We'll still be as full as we can be, Seaton said. Too soon? Filled, half-filled, quarter-filled, empty. Those are possible scenarios for Memorial Stadium in 2020. And at Northwestern and Northern Illinois, the other FBS schools in the state, conversations are being held everywhere. Eventually, proposals will go to state officials. It's not what we thought we would be doing with our spring, but I think it's been a really good exercise in fan care and team care, Arner said. The Illinois Sports Medicine Department has become vital to the process, both with the team and the game day experience. Things you won't see at Memorial Stadium in 2020. Face painting stations and inflatables. Those are easy decisions. Others are more nuanced and will take time. There's not one inch of the stadium or one part of the game day experience that we don't have many people examining, Arner said. Illinois will look for the easiest way to have the most touch-free environment. The school is working with its concessionaire, Spectra, to use the best practices available. When a comprehensive plan is in place, the school will get the word out through traditional media and social media. Education will be paramount to us being successful, Arner said. And she is hopeful fans will be allowed to attend games, and the school is planning for it. We've got to make those preparations now and hope that we are able to host fans, Arner said. Around the Big Ten, Arner said the conference schools are working together in advance of the season. We can learn a lot from each other, Arner said. We have the same goal, and that is hopefully to have a season and hopefully to do it with as little trauma to our fans as possible. We want our fans to be able, to the best of their ability, have a great experience and enjoy football as they have in past years. The three largest college stadiums in the country capacity-wise are in the Big Ten: Michigan with 107,601, Penn State 106,572, and Ohio State 104,944. Michigan Athletic Director Ward Manuel discussed the 2020 season last week. What will crowds look like at the Big House? Will it be 50% or 30% or 20% or 10 or 0? I'm not sure, Manuel said. That will be a combination of listening to public health officials and knowing what our stadium capacity can handle, given the direction that is put out by the governor's office and the university. It all depends. The sidelines at Michigan Stadium are an issue. There is very little room, which might make social distancing difficult for players and coaches. At Nebraska, there is the streak to consider. Since 1962, every Nebraska home football game has been sold out. That's 375 games in a row and counting. Nebraska's Memorial Stadium seats 85,458. If the school is allowed to sell only 40,000 tickets and they are all gobbled up, it will consider the streak intact. Longtime Lincoln Journal Star columnist Steve Sippel has talked with Nebraska AD Bill Moose. He has said on the record that he is 80% sure the season will go off as planned, Sippel said. As far as the crowd thing goes, they have literally 20 different models. Sippel said, if football isn't played in 2020, it will be catastrophic to Lincoln. It would be devastating, he said. I don't even want to think about what it would look like here come January if there is no football season. Polling place. Illinois Athletics is surveying fans before making any decisions about how to proceed with football in the fall. These are among the 20 questions fans were asked to answer, and they were multiple choice. How comfortable are you attending Illinois football and men's basketball games in the fall? Choices for answers were very comfortable, regardless of the safety guidance, very comfortable with social distancing, neither comfortable or uncomfortable, not comfortable at all, not comfortable, I am a high-risk individual. Next question was, if season ticket quantities need to be reduced due to social distancing, are you still interested in attending football and men's basketball games? Yes or no, or depends on how much it is reduced. And how would you feel about capacity increasing in Memorial Stadium throughout the season if restrictions were lifted across the state? Circle all that apply. It would be great to get closer to a packed Memorial Stadium. Or, I understand this is an unprecedented challenge in reseating the stadium. I would buy more tickets when I am able. I would not be happy about people with less priority sitting in better seats. I would not be happy about people sitting closer than 6 feet away at any point in the season. And how do you feel about all tickets being mobile this season? Answers, I'm very comfortable with mobile tickets. I haven't used it, but I'm comfortable with technology. I could do it, but I need to be educated, or I'm not comfortable at all. And how would you feel about being displaced from your current season ticket location in order to maintain social distancing? I completely understand this need. If it means I can get in the stadium, I'll do it, or absolutely not. Will you attend games if you are required to wear a mask or face covering while in common areas of the stadium? Yes, no matter the state safety guidance. Yes, but if the state says I don't have to, I'm not going to. And no. Will you attend football games if tailgating isn't allowed due to required social distancing? Yes, I completely understand. This is a different year. Yes, but I like a little bit of pregame entertainment. No, it's too important to my game day tradition. Would you have any interest in parking in special designated no tailgating lots in order to promote social distancing? Yes, I think that is a good option. I would be interested. Or I think this is a good option for people who are concerned, but I doubt I would use it. Or I have no interest in this. Yes, no. Will you attend games if the in-game programming is watered down? No band, smaller band, no marketing elements, just the game. Yes or no? Will you attend football and men's basketball games if you aren't guaranteed a normal parking spot in order to maintain social distancing? Yes or no? Would you still attend games if the entrance into Memorial Stadium or State Farm Center was regulated with time and gates you could enter, i.e., your entrance time is 45 minutes before kickoff through Portal 6? And would you still attend games if exiting Memorial Stadium or State Farm Center was regulated? Ushers would dismiss you by rows at game's end. And continuing with another article titled University Experience Will Be Different This Fall, iHotel. I think everyone's starting to plan ahead. But we're doing everything we can to try to make it perfect. The scenery...
Wait a second.
The receiving line for a recent wedding at the iHotel included no hugs and no contact. Only flowers thrown out of the windows of cars and horns that honked in the cars that drove by. Only six people attended the wedding, but many more came by to celebrate. For that couple, that's probably one of the memorable things they can talk about in 10 years. iHotel marketing manager Ann Olmsted said, "We've had a couple of weddings here, very, very small weddings, but we're doing everything we can try to make it perfect. Soon, those weddings and other events will likely become larger. The main topic of conversation at the iHotel in anticipation of Phase 4, likely starting Friday, Olmsted said, has been not having to say no to customers while following safety guidelines. Phase 4 could mean having weddings and meetings consisting of 50 people or less, with its 32,500 square foot conference center expansion set to open September 1. Olmsted and the hotel are itching to be able to host events that are even larger. It'll also allow them to host more guests in Houlihan's restaurant rather than having all of them sit outside. The iHotel staff is already booking for the fall. It's set to be packed for football games, assuming they happen. Even mom's weekend rooms are already being booked. The hotel is offering 24-hour cancellations for COVID-related issues. We are filled to the max on those weekends, Olmsted said. I think everyone's starting to plan ahead, so that's nice to see. We want to get back into the swing of things. On this day in area history, in 1920, the decision to buy the N.A. Riley business block on Urbana's Main Street as the site of the new Knights of Pythias building seemed assured. The other site under consideration was the Lindsay block, also on Main Street, although it was considered too small for the lodge's purposes. In 1970, University of Illinois commencement ceremonies for 4,783 graduates, unlike others in the country in the previous month, were quiet and orderly. The only disturbance was when candidates for ROTC commissions were recognized. The announcement was met by brief, scattered hissing from other graduates. In 2005, fire investigators were trying to determine what caused a fire in a southeast Urbana apartment building that displaced at least 10 residents. Fire Division Chief Richard Rotramel said a mother and daughter lived in one of the units in the Colorado Trace building at 902 East Harding Drive that was heavily damaged. Residents of the three-level building were safely evacuated. That included one woman who was taken out the window of her second-floor apartment, not the one where the fire was, for apparent smoke inhalation. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of News Gazette for Sunday, June 20th, 21st. Please stay tuned.